Welcome to Cybercast, decoding today's cyber issues. I'm Alexander Bolaba, production lead at GovCIO Media and Research. With me today is managing editor Ross John Fortuna. Hi, Ross.
Hello.
You had the opportunity to chat with Rear Admiral Wayne R. Arguin Jr., Assistant Commandant for Prevention Policy at the U.S. Coast Guard. How'd it go?
It was great. This was a long time coming. We'd really, well, not a long time, but a few weeks in the making, because we really wanted to talk to some folks from the Coast Guard about this executive order on port cybersecurity, because that has been a major point of the White House and certainly of the Coast Guard, and even to a larger extent, the Department of Homeland Security.
I know you get into this in your conversation, but you know, people don't really think about ports as being an area of cybersecurity concern. Why is this being highlighted in an executive order?
Well, it's something I don't know if I said on this particular recording, but I know I've said it a lot in Cybercast, which is the computer is everything. So you don't think of it when you think of a port that they will have connected records management systems or navigation management systems or anything. You don't think of connectivity when you think of ports. But it's not like they're sitting there with a pen and a notebook. All this stuff is digitized. All this stuff is connected. And there are real opportunities for bad actors to get in there and really mess things up.
What was Rear Admiral Arguin's perspective on this? How is he approaching this from the Coast Guard's perspective?
Well, one of the things we started off talking about was what this looks like if something goes wrong, because not a cyber threat by any stretch, and certainly the exact opposite of a cyber threat in a lot of ways. But when the big shipping boat clogged up the Suez Canal a few years ago, that really did disrupt global trade. So you can imagine that a cyber incident could do a similar type of thing in a way that the Coast Guard obviously has to be mindful of, and the United States government has to be clear with. There are the interconnectivity of global trade and the U.S. port system's place in that, but cannot be overestimated. And so because of that, this really hammers down the Coast Guard and the United States government's ability to respond to cybersecurity breaches in a much more nimble and much more effective way.
Well, this is a really fascinating and under-discussed topic, so let's not keep our listeners waiting. Let's dive into your conversation.
Rear Admiral Wayne Arguin Jr. serves as the Assistant Commandant for Prevention Policy, where he's responsible for the development of policy standards and programs promoting marine safety, environmental stewardship, and security. He joins me now to discuss the White House executive order on strengthening the cybersecurity of U.S. ports. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ross.
So the greatest maritime cyber threats, that's a big part of the executive order. How do they manifest? What are they?
Yeah, so the marine transportation system writ large is really responsible for allowing goods and services across the globe. And as we've seen, those supply chains are all interconnected. They're becoming more and more interconnected using technology to try and improve efficiencies. But that same technology really does open up potential vulnerabilities. And as we've seen, anything that has the potential to impact the efficiency of global supply chains really is a concern. It can have significant economic impacts. It can affect national security. And so finding ways to close those vulnerabilities, to reduce the likelihood of a disruption, is really a focus area. The executive order really broadened Coast Guard's Captain of the Port Authority. So if there is a cyber incident that poses a threat to that marine transportation system, local captains of the port can then take action to minimize that threat or hazard, to take control action on a vessel or to a facility that's covered by the Marine Transportation Security Act, to minimize the potential impact, understand what that hazard is, and then look for some way to mitigate or resolve that so that the efficient movement of commerce can continue.
So that the order specifically mentions Chinese manufacturer tip to store cranes that are at commercial U.S. seaports. What kind of specific threats do these cranes pose to the U.S. cyber infrastructure? Obviously, I don't want you to be giving me chapter and verse stuff that we can't say on a hot mic, but what do those look like?
Well, I mean, when you look at the volume, the majority of ship-to-shore cranes are manufactured by PRC, and I've mentioned that sort of in tandem ability to become more efficient, but then also the interconnectedness. Every one of those efficiencies brought on by technology potentially opens up vulnerabilities that could have significant impacts to the supply chain. And so really understanding how those cranes can be operated. In many instances, they can be accessed remotely. They can be controlled remotely. And so being able to fully understand who has access to the information, has access to control those systems is something that is of great importance to ensure that that people aren't taking advantage at an inopportune time to cause a disruption in the supply chain. The focus of that executive order is to make sure that those vulnerabilities that are known have been closed by the entities that own those types of cranes, that they understand where those vulnerabilities are, and that they have control as opposed to maybe someone outside of their company.
The executive order announcement also included a lot about U.S. Coast Guard proposed rule to combat the incursions that face the MTS. What will the rule do to combat those threats?
So the proposed rulemaking for enhanced cybersecurity within the marine transportation system really is focused on the prevention side of the equation, focused on enhancing device security, access control to networks, network segmentation, the ability to understand who has control or access to the network, and then to have a plan in place when, not if, there is a compromise, to be able to bring that system back online in a safe and effective way, really trying to build in resilience. But if you think about the executive order, it focuses on response authority. So once an incident happens, controlling and mitigating the impact of that particular incident. And then the NPRM will focus on closing known vulnerabilities in systems and having a plan in place to be able to regularly assess those networks for vulnerabilities and then be able to close those down. It also comes with a requirement to report when there have been breaches so that we can pass the word to other potentially affected entities. You know, a cascading effect of a cyber incident could have global impacts. And so once we understand that a particular vulnerability has been exploited, we want to get the word out to everyone else that may have that same vulnerability to try and close that down. And so we look at it from a prevention and a response perspective. We're very much interested in feedback. As you know, proposed rules have a window where those that might be affected can provide feedback on whether or not the proposal is on target. And so that rulemaking will remain open until the 22nd of April. And we're looking for a lot of feedback so that we can get this right as we sort of continue to look to raise the bar with respect to cyber protocols.
Well, you mentioned the global impacts of these kind of attacks. What does that look like? What are the consequences? What are the reverberations of an attack on MTS?
Well, I mean, all you have to do really is look back at the supply chain challenges that we had in Los Angeles, Long Beach. You know, any sort of disruption to that entire supply chain will have pretty significant and wide sweeping economic impacts. You know, it could be something as simple as, you know, people not being able to get goods and services in the time that they become accustomed to. Folks like to order stuff and then receive it on their doorstep the next day. That could have a negative impact. It could also have an impact on our ability to bring in, you know, vital medical supplies. Everything, 90% of what we see in the way of goods and services in one way, shape, or form comes across the water is influenced by shipping. And so when you think about that volume of stuff and an impact that would disrupt any aspect of that could have devastating effects, both economically, but then also when you think about just the ability to get parts, and you know, we've heard you know, several comments about delays in just getting goods and services. Yeah, 6 month delay in being able to get a washer and dryer causes some problems with folks. And so they're just, the maritime shipping really does influence global economies. And so the efficiencies that have been built into that system, that resiliency really needs to be built back into it so that if there are challenges, those impacts aren't felt as dramatically as they have been in the past.
Well, to that end, this is what you do. How does the Coast Guard protect against these cyber threats that come toward maritime systems? Like, what is the Coast Guard's role in this, and how are those barriers brought up?
So there's a couple different things that we're doing, at least from a Coast Guard perspective. I mentioned captains of the port, and captains of the port are charged with assessing risks, both on the safety and security side, to the marine transportation system. So we have cyber professionals that work within each of our ports at the local sectors that are regularly engaging with facilities and vessels to understand not only are they seeing attacks, but are they understanding where those vulnerabilities exist and are there opportunities to be able to close those. We also have a dedicated team, a Coast Guard cyber team, that provides services to not only to our field commands, but to industry, to be able to come on board, assess their networks, provide them essentially a free service to say, there's a couple places where you might want to reconsider how you've got your network configured. You've opened yourself up to a potential cyber attack, and then use that as a way to regularly assess network systems to prevent those types of interruptions. And so that boots on deck effort at the local sector, at the sector level, really is focused on understanding the impact of a cyber incident, the cyber protection teams, our cyber mission teams that work with Coast Guard cyber are really the technical experts. They understand how to get onto a network. They understand where things look a little bit different, maybe anomalies in the system, to look for malware, to look for things that are not necessarily baked into the system or engineered into the system that could have negative impacts. And then if an incident happens, there are a variety of different ways that they can come back in to assess the health of that network, to be able to bring it back online, to advise the local sector commander as to whether or not that system has been addressed, sanitized, and then they feel comfortable that it can be brought online safely and securely.
That's a lot of processing, a lot of data. How does sort of AI, it's 2024, we can't have a conversation about cybersecurity without talking about AI. How does AI factor into that?
Well, I would say that Coast Guard is much like the rest of the federal government, and certainly industry is looking at ways to better utilize technology to help us. Coast Guard cyber does have access to, you know, they are capturing a lot of information when they go out and do these assessments, and then they're able to take advantage of that technology using AI to be able to identify where those anomalies are. You might imagine it would take a human quite a while to go through lines and lines of code looking for the sort of needle in the haystack. I think AI really does expedite that assessment, looking for those anomalies. And it may be legitimate, but at least they're able to very quickly assess information that then looks different. And then we're able to partner across the interagency, if we do find those anomalies, to be able to determine whether or not they're seeing those same types of anomalies in other areas. I think we also, as a member of the Intel community, have access to information that may be helpful from a national perspective that we can then push out either known state actors that are at least aspiring to take advantage of open networks. If there's information to suggest that a particular industry segment is either being targeted or has the likelihood of being targeted, we're able to provide that advance warning, or at least as much information as we have to help close down vulnerabilities that could impact the marine transportation system.
Well, is there anything we didn't cover that you know, that you think we should, about the executive order, about cybersecurity and U.S. Coast Guard?
Well, I think when you really think about the marine transportation system and its significance to global economies and national security, and then you overlay that with the rapid injection of technology, it just makes sense that you're going to really have to start paying attention to networks and cybersecurity as a real risk, a real threat that needs to be considered. I think the big difference is that threat could be exploited in a very rapid fashion and could have global impacts. And so being able to fully understand who has access to a network, what's being added to a network and the potential implications of that additional technology is something I think has to be first and foremost from a safety perspective, but also from a security perspective. And so we are 100% committed to engaging, building out that skill set so that we are prepared to minimize potential disruptions to the marine transportation system. And I think this is going to continue to be an evolving sort of world of work where shared information from industry when they've had vulnerabilities, but then also a two-way street when the federal government, the interagency, has information that it would be helpful to industry. We've got to have that two-way communication so that we are able to close those vulnerabilities down quickly so that we minimize potential disruptions.
Yeah, the goal, of course, obviously, is security and safety. And those disruptions certainly, you know, are a major roadblock to that.
I do think when people think cybersecurity, they get really technical really quickly. At its most basic, cyber hygiene is probably the thing, you know, the basic cyber hygiene. Do you have access to your passwords? Are you regularly changing your passwords? Do you know who's on your network? Some of that basic cyber awareness will go a long way to closing vulnerabilities. And you know, maybe 5 years ago, people weren't really paying attention to it as much. I think we've changed the narrative there a bit. And there's going to have to be a continuous assessment of networks. But I think we're beyond where people are thinking cyber's not a big deal. I think the idea of basic cyber hygiene is going to be something that is going to be sort of across the board in every industry, not just the marine transportation system. People are going to need to pay attention to who has access to their network and where does the information go, who can access and make adjustments to their network. That is something that's sort of baked into routine business these days that really wasn't something I would even argue 5 years ago.
The phrase I've used on this show and before is the computer is everything. And I think that is something that is somewhat, depending on who you are and how you came up, there is a real split there, whether or not you grew up with the computer being everything or not. And so that distinction, particularly when it comes to cybersecurity and a connected world, the Internet of Things, all those buzzwordy notions is easy to forget sometimes, but it is, especially if you don't interact with people who don't see the computer as everything. You know, I know that can be, particularly in government, there can be a split there because things move a little bit slow. So when the computer became everything, I know we talked to some people at our Cyberscape event who said, you know, these are people who got into these jobs not thinking they were going to have to manage major IT projects, and now they do. These are people in, you know, high levels of agencies, and that's everybody does that.
Yeah, I think nowadays you would be hard-pressed to find somebody that doesn't have some connectivity, right? Everybody carries a phone. And if you think about everything that you do now that is on that phone, if you took that phone away from somebody, and that's a cyber incident, right? I take away your ability to use your phone. How would you recover to be able to continue doing your business? I would argue that you probably could. It would take some time, so there would be a disruption, but you would be nowhere near as efficient. Now, there are those that certainly would argue that sometimes the computer makes it less efficient, but you take away how you become comfortable using technology and have to go back to how you did it before you had that technology, there will be a delay, there will be some version of a disruption. And so finding ways to preserve that connectivity through cyber, either cyber hygiene or cyber protocols, regularly assessing your network is really gonna be important. And I think it would be really difficult, especially now that the way we are so interconnected, to go back to maybe a paper-based ledger. And I think all of the data that is being pulled off of all those networks is really being used to make better use of time and resources. And so trying to go backwards on that would really be difficult given how interconnected things are. And so I see cyber is going to continue to be a sort of front and center issue that has to be addressed, not just in the MTS, but across all modes of transportation, all industries, given the interconnectedness that everything is today anyway.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I think there were some people who said when the executive order announcement and the proposed rule announcement came out, it's like, well, what do ports have to do with cybersecurity? It's like, well, how do you think those ledgers are done? There's not a guy with a notebook, you know, and along those things. This is all done through data.
There's probably still a small entity out there that still uses notebooks and then transfers those notes into something that isn't necessarily connected. But for a globally interconnected company, they are 100% reliant on that technology. And if that technology is compromised, there will have negative impacts on their ability to do their job. So, you know, if you're not paying attention to cyber as a thing, chances are you are likely going to have your backup plan is going to be painful.
Yeah, you're certainly going to be behind everyone who is. Well, thanks so much for talking to us. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Ross. That was a great conversation with Rear Admiral Arguin. Listeners can tune in next week for a brand new episode in our GovCIO Media and Research podcast feed. But in the meantime, if you like what you heard, make sure you leave a review and a 5-star rating on the podcast platform of your choice. Thank you all for listening. I'm Alexander Bolova.
I'm Ross John for today.
Thank you for listening. Cybercast, along with GovCast and HealthCast, is a production of GovCIO Media and Research. To explore our content, visit our website, govciomedia.com. Keep an eye out for new episodes every Tuesday. And if you like what you heard, leave us a review on the podcast platform of your choice. Have a topic you want us to discuss? Contact us at newsletter@govcio.com.